So I wanted to start this morning with a bit of humor and make you smile, and so I wanted to make an exegetical insight from last week's text. That's a joke. That's not funny. That's exciting to me. From the Greek, exegetical, exegetical means like something you get out of the text, an insight. When you study the scriptures and make conclusions, you do exegesis. And so, anyway, there was this line in Matthew 28 last week, and we kind of skipped over it a little bit during the message, but it says that the women left the tomb with fear and great joy. And it's a great line. It's kind of the complexity of Easter as they experienced it. These women who didn't even really know what was going on, but there's the fear and there's the great joy. And I was thinking about that phrase this week and thinking about how we live and how I live. That oftentimes, instead of living with some fear, but great joy, we live, and I live, with great fears and momentary pleasures. The resurrection means that we flip that script of how we usually live. Instead of living in big and great fears and momentary little pleasures that kind of distract us and allow us to forget about our fears for a moment, the resurrection compels us to live with great joy, even as we face momentary trials. In order to do this, we must, as Christians, as followers of Jesus, we must live with the resurrection front and center in our lives. And so let's look at this text from 1 Peter. 1 Peter 1, and it is from beginning to end a resurrection Easter text. I mean, there are words like hope, living hope. There's words like new birth. There's words, very specifically, the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. And there's this great phrase at the end of what Tammy read just a minute ago. It says, although you have not seen him, you love him. Even though you do not see him now, you believe in him, and you rejoice with an indescribable and glorious joy. The New Testament is often at a loss for words, right? Because we use the word joy for a lot of things, and things that are truly joyful. But Peter says, no, it actually goes beyond that. It is indescribable. There are not words that can explain or describe this joy that we have. Indescribable and glorious joy. And I want to take a moment to look at how Peter gets there. He says that the joy is beyond description, but the reason for the joy is pretty clear. And it's really relevant to us on this Sunday after Easter. Let's look again at this phrase in verse 3. It says, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. And blessed just means praise. Praises be to God. Praise be to God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. By his great mercy, just because he loves us, he has given us a new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. A living hope. It's not a hope that is sometime in the future that we can't access now. It's a living hope. It is alive. It is active in our lives. It is what drives us forward as Christians. A living hope. And it comes from the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. That this past thing allows us to see what God is ultimately doing for you and for me and for the entire world. As my friend Luke Linden preached in his last sermon at Sylvania a couple weeks ago, he talked about how sometimes the future reaches back and reminds us of our goal. That we are destined for resurrection, that we are destined for joy. And sometimes we need God to reach back and pull us towards that goal. That's what the resurrection does for us. It gives us this living hope that drives us and pulls us towards what the world is ultimately moving to. Theologian Jürgen Moltmann then connects these two ideas, this living hope and this indescribable and glorious joy, and he says that hope is anticipated joy. Hope is anticipated joy. Think about that for just a minute. Hope means that we believe that joy is the end of the story. When we have hope, when we live in this world, not in fear, we'll get back to that in a minute, not in fear, but in hope, we believe that our destiny, that the destiny of the world is joy, that the story ends not in tragedy, but in triumph. Not ultimately in death, but in resurrection. That's what hope is, the anticipation of joy. And now we might read this text and think, well, Peter doesn't really understand what's going on in my life. You know, I've faced hard things. And frankly, there are times where I just cannot see how things will work out. But Peter, in his call to praise and call to joy, isn't naive. Look at verse 5 and 6, or verse 6. He says, "In this you rejoice, even if now, for a little while, you have had to suffer various trials." And now, even for the little while, and the various trials are not small things. For the early church, they're facing persecution. They're facing death and rejection, both at the hands of their brothers and sisters in the Jewish community and among Romans, the Roman leaders and authorities. We see that all in the crucifixion of Jesus, right? We see this collaboration of the pious and the empire coming together to crucify Jesus. And that's what the disciples and the earliest Christians faced. So when he's talking about these for a momentary time, these various trials, he's not being naive, he's not minimizing what they're going through. In fact, Peter ends up crucified as well. And legend has it that he was going to be crucified, and he said, "No, I'm not even worthy to die the same death as my Lord." And so he was crucified upside down. And so Peter isn't naive in this. He just has that much hope in the joy that is coming for him and for all people of faith. Peter knows that the journey of faith now involves waiting. Now, even now we're facing suffering, but as we wait, it's going to be worth the wait. That it involves suffering, that it involves growing pains. He talks about how these trials are going to serve to prove the genuineness of their faith, and we all are growing in our faith. And it takes time for that to grow up into its full measure. He fully understands and yet calls us to live with a living hope because of the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. That we live anticipating a future of resurrection joy. And he goes on to describe, in some ways, what that joy is all about. He says, he's given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, and then into an inheritance. An inheritance is something that, we know what an inheritance is, that God has for us, that is ours, just not yet, not quite yet. And he says this inheritance is, first of all, imperishable. It's imperishable. Very much like Jesus. That even though Jesus was crucified, he was not subject to death. Death could not hold him. And that's what our inheritance is. Even though we might suffer now, it cannot be killed. It cannot be destroyed. It cannot die. It's imperishable. It's undefiled. It's undefiled. Something being defiled means that there's something else mixed into it. It's not pure. And so in this life, a lot of times our pleasures are kind of this mixture. We talk about things that are bittersweet, right? And even the pleasures that we have, a lot of times are mixed in with some greed or some addiction. There's this mixture, even in the pleasures of this world. He says the joy that is before us is not mixed. It's not defiled. It is pure, unadulterated joy. And it is unfading. It is unfading. We know that pleasures, and a lot of the things we talk about as blessings, even we might use the word joy for them. We know that so many of those things come and they go. Right? We have these moments of happiness and bliss, and then it's gone. The other shoe drops. Something doesn't come out the way we thought, or someone leaves or dies. Good situation comes to an end. That's not the way with this resurrection joy that we have. It is imperishable, it is undefiled, it is unfading, and it is kept in heaven for you. And that doesn't mean that heaven is this like storage room of all kinds of good, pleasurable things. It means that it is that your inheritance, that this resurrection hope that we have, this hope of new creation that we have, is in the very presence of God. That it cannot be taken away. It is safe and secure, and when we are brought into the presence of God, we experience the fullness of that inheritance of joy. And Peter believes that this guarantee of future joy is greater than any of our momentary trials that will fade away. And so how do we live in this Easter joy? And why does it often feel like we don't live in this kind of joy? Well, I want to come back to that theologian Jürgen Moltmann and that quote. He says, "Hope is anticipated joy just as anxiety is anticipated terror." Hope is anticipated joy just as anxiety is anticipated terror. So when you're anxious, you're anticipating the worst case scenario. Or at least a bad case scenario, if that's a phrase. Right? And what terrors are you anticipating? Well, there could be lots of them. There's plenty of things that could happen. There are plenty of things that could happen to our bodies, to our children, to our other loved ones, to our property, to our society, to our world. And so we're anxious because we're anticipating those different terrifying things. There are so many painful things that can happen to us in this world. But, first of all, as Peter tells us, they are not ultimate things. That's important to remember. Resurrection joy is an ultimate thing that will ultimately be true forever and ever. These things are temporary. Second, they are not certain things. Right? So a lot of times we spend a lot of time, anxiety anticipating terrors that have never come to be. And I bet all of us can point to something that we were anxious about at some point that never even transpired. Right? It's not that no suffering will happen. Sometimes the things we think might happen, the bad things we think might happen, do happen. But we waste a lot of energy anticipating terrors that never come true. And third, these sufferings and these painful experiences are not empty or meaningless things. And that's so important. That's what we see in the cross and the resurrection. The cross is worst case scenario. Not just for Jesus, but for the world who decided that when God came, we would kill him. Right? But the cross is filled for us as Christians with meaning. At our Good Friday service over at River Point, we had three stations, about three things that the cross means to us. We could have had a dozen stations about what the cross is all about. And the same is true with our suffering. Peter says, "In this you rejoice, even if now for a little while you have had to suffer various trials, so that the genuineness of your faith, being more precious than gold, that though it's perishable, is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed." He says our suffering, not only does it grow us in our faith and purify our faith. You know how gold is purified? It's burned, it's melted, it's heated until the impurities can be taken out. Right? And that's the true of our faith. But not only that, but ultimately our suffering makes rather the resurrection joy that much sweeter. Just as the cross makes the resurrection that much more amazing and celebratory, so our trials, when we are delivered from them, in this moment or the next moment or ultimately in the resurrection, our trials make our praise that much louder. And so we are called to live in the certain joy of resurrection that takes all the sufferings we might experience and transforms them into praise and glory and honor. The key is, then, for us to keep that resurrection front and center in our lives. It's hard to do. A lot of times, what's front and center in our lives is the aches and pains of our bodies. And that's what we just think about and talk about as we wake up with them. The annoyances that we face on a daily basis, right? That person on the phone that I was trying to press like 16 buttons to get to them, and then finally they answer, and it's just so frustrating, and that's what consumes our minds and our conversations. The fears that we have, the news that we watch becomes front and center in our lives. So we start anticipating terror and forget that our hope is in a joy that cannot be taken away. Peter, as he writes this letter, you notice what chapter this whole thing is in. We went through Peter a few years ago. Chapter 1. This whole hope, this whole joy, this indescribable and glorious joy that he talks about, first thing he says, front and center, remember our joy. This joy that moves us into the world and the world's suffering, not away from it. You don't have to get a protective posture. You don't have to create a fortress around this joy because it cannot be taken away. It is undefiled, imperishable, unfading. And so we move into the suffering of the world knowing that no one can take our joy away, and we share that hope with others. We join in God's work in wiping away the tears from the eyes and turning crosses into empty tombs. And so, friends, in this second Sunday in Easter, don't be confused. Don't be confused. There are many good things and pleasurable things in this life. Families, our friends, food, wonderful food, Indians baseball, many other things. But these are not the true and lasting blessings of God. These are things that come and they go. We live with a living hope in the resurrection of Jesus from the dead, that the destiny of your life and of this world is always and forever joy. So let's live with the resurrection front and center in our lives. Let's wake up and read 1 Peter 1. Wake up with these words, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. And remember that the destiny of our lives is indescribable and glorious joy."